Our thanks go to Hartbury University and College, Harper Adams University, NFU Mutual, Thring Solicitors, DataTag, and Nugent Engineering for supporting Series 2 of Keeping on Track. Hello, I'm Adam Henson. Welcome to the second series of Keeping on Track, a podcast series made by the farming community for the farming community. You'll know by now that the aim of these programmes is to help us understand more about the challenges we face in farming, and especially to find out how we can manage them. So quite a bit of what we're hearing is designed to give us some coping mechanisms, some tools to help us when the going gets tough. And that's what we're talking about today.
Thank you, Adam. I'm Dominic Arkwright. Today we're talking to Willem Kuyken, Professor of Clinical Psychology and also Professor of Mindfulness at the University of Oxford. So naturally, we're talking about mental health today, both what can go wrong and what we can do about it. The first thing, Willem says, if you are suffering, you're not alone.
I think mental health problems are incredibly common. As many as one in five people will have a significant mental health problem at some point in their life. And if you just think about the maths of that, that means if the world's population alive today, that's about 1 billion people alive today, will at some point have a mental health problem of kind of significant clinical levels. And of course, many of those problems arise for the first time early in life, in late adolescence, early adulthood. And when they do, people can tend to struggle with that for a lifetime. But the way I like to think of mental health as being a bit like health, it's on a continuum from somebody who is at the moment doing just great, maybe even thriving, to somebody who is doing fine, to somebody who is languishing. Maybe they've just, you know, not really paying attention to their mental health. They're not in great shape, but they don't have mental health problems, right the way through to people who've got real mental health problems. And a few other things I'd say about that is it changes all the time. That, you know, just because somebody is struggling at the moment doesn't mean they will next year. So mental health is something that is in flux a bit, the way our health is in flux. And I think one of the things that's also interesting about mental health is that to a lot of people, it's not visible. It's a very personal experience. So somebody may on the outside look like they're doing just great, even to their family or to their friends or down in the pub. But actually internally, they could be crippled by anxiety or depression or even kind of more extreme forms of mental health problems like psychosis.
This is a problem we're coming up against in this series. If it's not visible, how can we spot the signs? How do we know it's there, either in ourselves or in other people?
It's about giving people the space to talk about how they're doing, and everybody will talk about it in a different way. You know, I was listening to two men talking the other day, and this one guy was saying that he, you know, he'd have sometimes some sad days, but it became clear listening to them talking that he was talking about depression, and the other man knew that he was talking about depression. And so it's also being sensitive to people having different ways of describing what's happening for them. There are, of course, behavioural changes. You know, for people who are depressed, they will tend to withdraw more. For people who are anxious, they'll tend to avoid challenging situations and difficult situations. So you can also see it in people's behaviour, sometimes in quite particular ways. I mean, irritability, for example, can be a signal of somebody who's going through a difficult time. Sleep problems can be a sign that somebody's going through difficult times. So actually, mental health problems often do manifest in these kind of in how people behave, but also their sleep, their appetite, perhaps how much they're drinking as well.
And doctors and psychologists will say that if you're experiencing symptoms of depression for most of the day, every day, for more than 2 weeks, you should seek help. But we've heard often how reluctant the farming community can be to raise the issue. So let's try and get some help from Willem.
The feeling of being overwhelmed is a kind of mental state into which we've kind of come up into our head and we just feel overwhelmed. And it can be really helpful in moments like that to just take your awareness and bring them right down into your body, maybe into the soles of your feet, just feeling the soles of your feet on the footbed in the tractor, or maybe your hands on the steering wheel or on the controls, and just taking some deeper breaths. And that isn't some sort of trite advice about just take a deep breath. I mean, our breath is intimately connected with our mental and physical health. So actually just taking yourself out of your mind, which has gone into this very kind of threat and overwhelmed mode, and coming back into the body and just down regulating, steadying yourself with the breath, is a very practical thing that can be done in that particular moment. I do think it is also helpful to maybe just scale that up a little bit and think about self-care. So if you think about that tractor, and modern tractors are pretty expensive bits of kit, you wouldn't for a minute think about not getting the tractor serviced, not having an oil change, not making sure that it was hosed down if there were some chemicals on it that were going to damage the tractor. You would do all of those things to make sure that expensive bit of kit was in good shape. Same with if you were keeping cattle or sheep, you would want to make sure that your stock, your livestock, was well looked after. Why are we any different? You know, we are, our bodies, our minds are what are moving us through our lives. And they are going to be with us from the moment we're born to our very last breath. They require exactly the same kind of approach of maintenance, of self-care, of attention. If we're overwhelmed, we're exhausted, we're not sleeping well, we're drinking too much, those are all things that are not going to be good for our bodies and minds. So having a sort of a longer view of this is actually as important as the farm, as the livestock, as the tractor, and I need to do what it takes to look after it. And it's actually not rocket science. It's exercise, it's diet, it's good sleep, and it's good relationships. Probably if you were to say, what does all of the science point to in terms of kind of what supports mental health, those would be probably the key ones.
Exercise, diet, good sleep, and good relationships. Let's dig a little deeper. Exercise, well known to be good for mood. But what about diet?
Let's go back to the tractor. You wouldn't just chuck any old, this looks like vegetable oil, I'm not sure how old it is, where it's coming. You wouldn't chuck that in your tractor. And you wouldn't chuck the fat off your Sunday roast down the sink. But that's essentially what you're doing. If you are eating a lot of fatty red meat, you are doing the same thing with your own arteries. People understand the effects of smoking. They understand the effects of that kind of diet. So I think it's about raising consciousness and awareness and about making choices and choices that are about valuing our physical and our mental health. Of course, then you can design things into it. You know, if you don't have a very unhealthy food in the cupboard, but you have something more healthy, you're going to be more likely to eat it.
We'll talk more about diet in another programme about how to stay physically and mentally well. But what about sleep? All very well to know it's good for you, but are you really going to get your 8 hours a night during lambing, or calving, or harvesting, or when the inspector's coming round?
It's not realistic to think that people are going to sleep well all of the time. So the point is more about over the course of a year, is somebody getting decent and good sleep. Why is it important? Well, increasingly we know that when we sleep, the body is restoring itself. It's like a sort of, it's when we plug the electric car into the charger, and during that period the car is recharging itself. So what happens when we sleep is there's quite a lot of evidence that kind of the gut and the blood system are cleaning out toxins and resetting. But actually, as importantly, the mind is consolidating all of the memories from the day, processing all the difficult things from the day, so that when we wake up in the morning, we are restored, we're replenished, we're reset. So that's why sleep is important. Of course, there are times where we're going to sleep less. But it isn't as if you have to sleep at particular times, having a nap at certain times. You know, there's some evidence that in evolutionary times, people would have slept more during the winter period and less during the summer. I think there's some evidence we need to sleep less when there's more light. And that people would actually not necessarily sleep through the night. They'd get up in the middle of the night, do a bit of work, and then go back to sleep. So it's not clear that we need to sleep from this hour to that hour. It's just about having enough sleep and enough high quality sleep so that we can replenish our bodies and our minds, and to prioritize that and to see that again as something that we are putting first because it's important. There is, of course, a degree of planning and effectiveness and organization around that. And there will be periods of time in the year which are just very busy. That actually, you know, if we look at farming and we look at the course of a year in farming, there are periods which are fallow and there are periods which are high yield and there are periods which are low yield. And I think probably we as animals, human beings are after all animals, go through something similar and need something similar. So there may be times where we're busy, but there need to be times where we're also fallow and resting.
So what does Willem Kuyken recommend for relaxing, for getting away from the stress?
I would answer that by saying that actually everybody's different. And the best way to know what you find relaxing, what you find restorative, is to find a way of reflecting on your own life. And one way in which people do that is maybe just before you go to sleep, and you're lying in bed, and in the minutes before you go to sleep, just reflect back on the day and think about, from the day that's just gone, what did I really appreciate? What made me happy? What made me feel like I was doing well, like my life was going well? And that will be very indicative. For some people, it'll be, oh, I really enjoyed doing my Lego, being with my friends down in the pub, or going for a run, or whatever it might be. I think it'll be different for everybody. And I think if you get into the habit of doing that every day, and by the way, there's evidence that if you just do that every day, that is actually good for your mental health. Because what you're doing is you're taking your attention and you're focusing on the parts of your life that you find joyful, that you find are moments of love, moments of connection, moments of relaxation, whatever you want to call it. And then it's not rocket science. You start making some adjustments. And you go, you know what? When I sat in front of the telly and I drank a beer, I loved it. So I'm going to give myself permission to do that on a regular basis. Or actually, when I sat in front of the telly and drank a beer, I just felt tired and drunk and didn't sleep very well. I'm going to do less of that. So I think you start using that sort of little kind of bit of data at the end of the day to begin making some adjustments to your day. It's no different to, you know, doing a review at the end of a farming year about which practices have led to the best yield. I personally have a whole range of different things. I have some very good friends, and I have my family, and spending time with them is incredibly restorative. I also meditate. I ride a motorcycle, and that's something that brings me a lot of joy. I exercise, I swim, I like to cook. But again, this is exactly a product of, over years and years, reflecting on what's important to me.
But clearly for Willem, a professor of mindfulness, that is a key ingredient, and he's written a book about it.
So the book is called Mindfulness for Life, and the premise is very simple. It's that mindfulness practices, being aware, having an attitude of mind which is curious, kind, caring, living a life well lived, is something we can do in all the small moments of our day and throughout our life. And if we do that, we are more likely to live a life well lived, rather than by default somehow erring onto a path of busy, 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 and then we get to the end of our life and go, oh my gosh, I have so many regrets. And that's the simple premise, is that these are practices and ideas that have been around for thousands of years, people have found helpful for thousands of years, and it seems to me never has there been a time in the arc of human history that they could be more helpful.
And don't be put off by the word mindfulness.
Well, the word mindfulness has all sorts of associations. So let me just lose the word mindfulness for a moment and take two aspects of mindfulness and just describe those. The first is our attention. We have a choice about what we pay attention to and who we pay attention to and where we place our attention. And what's happening in the world today is that there are lots of people who are trying to grab our attention, because our attention is worth money. And so there are very clever ways on apps and in phones and on the radio and in the TV to grab our attention and drive us somewhere to make us do something and like something and buy something. So if you take your attention and you say it's a bit like the contents of your fridge, it's a bit like saying, I am going to let lots of other people decide what's in my fridge. And then I'm just going to eat it without questioning it. Most people would think that's not a good idea. But that's what we're doing with our attention. So the first part of mindfulness is actually beginning to learn that like a torch beam, like a flashlight, we can choose where we place our attention. We can decide what we watch, who we talk to, how much time we spend on different things. A lot of the time, not all of the time. And that will make a complete difference to the landscape of our life. That's one aspect of mindfulness. Another aspect of mindfulness is what I describe a bit like the weather or the landscape of our mind. You know, if you're working on a farm every day, you probably are aware, obviously, of the weather and of the landscape, but it's become the background, it's what you know. And our minds are much the same. They're where we live, it's what we know, and we don't necessarily really register deeply the landscape of our mind. But a lot of people live with a mind that is incredibly, in some people's cases, self-critical. They'll have a voice in their mind which says, not good enough, not hard enough, you're not working, it's never going to work out. Or some people have minds that are incredibly hyper-vigilant to danger and to threat. They're forever scanning around going, oh, something's going to go wrong here, I'm going to crash, this person's going to exclude me from their group, or when I walk into the pub, nobody will want to talk to me. You know, their mind is, that's the landscape of their mind. And of course, that powerfully shapes our lives. And one of the other things that mindfulness does is it helps us to become more familiar with that landscape, those weather patterns, and to start to change it, to actually start re-landscaping the mind to the qualities that are going to be better for our mental health. Now, that's different for different people, but I'd say some pretty common ones are a sense of curiosity, a sense of playfulness, kindness, a sense of compassion and care. These kinds of qualities, for many people, have gotten a bit squeezed out by busyness, by pressure, whatever it might be. And we can reconnect with those qualities. Another really simple strategy is maybe actually to notice all of the thinking and the worry, and then just going and taking a walk. And when you take a walk, just take a walk. So the walk isn't a chance to ruminate, it's to take the worries and putting them down and coming back them later. One of the things that's talked about as a thing to do with children, but I think it's actually good to do throughout one's life, is what sometimes be called a worry jar, where what you do is you can't sleep or there's so much on your mind, you just write down all of your worries on a piece of paper and you put them in a jar. And in the act of putting them in the jar, you say, okay, that's going in the jar, I'm going to come back to that later. And what's interesting about that, it helps people to put it down, at least a little bit. But when you ask people, can you go back to that worry jar a week later, a month later, a year later, they go, oh my God, I can't believe I was worried about that. I can't believe I was losing sleep over that. And it's a way of helping people to see that these are just the thoughts that are running through our mind like weather systems. We don't have to run away with them. We don't have to get consumed by them. And that ability to kind of step back and have a different perspective, I think is really, really powerful.
So that's mindfulness and Professor Willem Kuyken's book, Mindfulness for Life, out later this year. But before we go, let's hear Willem's explanation for why we just can't switch off.
So this might sound very trite, but if people always feel on, it's a good idea to remind themselves that they do have an off switch. They do have a choice. So if that sounds, if somebody's going, oh, I really don't think that's the case, let me explain some of the psychology behind why it doesn't feel like it's the case. That all of the things that are drawing our attention with this sense of urgency are essentially hacking our bodies and our brains. So what they're doing is they're employing very deeply rooted things in our bodies and brains, which are primed to look for problems, and problems that are potentially going to threaten our life, that are going to be dangerous or are going to be missed opportunities. So the mind is constantly looking for these things, and when it sees one, it locks onto them and it deals with it. And the kind of classic example is, you know, you're living kind of on the edge of the African savannah, and something dangerous comes onto the horizon and you have to act. And once you've acted with that, you lie back under the tree again and you sleep. But what's happening is that the bit of the brain that looks at the attention, that upregulates the body, that pays attention to that threat on the savannah, now sees that in a phone. And it sees it in the supermarket, and it sees it in the off-license, and it sees it in our friends who are always available to us on messaging or WhatsApp or whatever it might be. And we are drawn into and constantly dealing with what our body and our brain thinks is a lion in the savannah. So we're not able to turn it off because we're constantly being bombarded with those things. So we have to start engineering our environment so that we are less exposed to those things. And then once we've got a little bit more self-control, we can then maybe kind of manage those things a bit better. So a very obvious hack, if you like, is people who sleep with the phone by their bed. And I've seen this with my own daughters, is if the notifications are going off, they lift them up and they look at them. And that will set them back another 20, 30 minutes to falling asleep. Turn the phone off, leave it downstairs, and then go to bed. It's an easy thing to do, but a lot of people find that very difficult. But the brain and the body are wired for that kind of input. And when people are designing Instagram and TikTok, they know that, and they're designing it for that purpose.
That was Professor Willem Kuyken. So, Adam, mindfulness. A lot of people do it, but I imagine not too many in the farming community.
I think you're absolutely right. I quite often think about, you know, maybe I should do a bit of yoga. Maybe I should take some time out and do some mindfulness. You know, I know all about it and I believe in it. You know, it is a thing. But we tend not to, I think. Interestingly, you know, with Willem, fantastic the way he explains how our brains work and how they're an important part of the engine of our body and how we must look after them. And, you know, comparing it to a tractor and not putting rubbish oil in your tractor, or a cow, you wouldn't feed your cow something horrible. We need to think about that ourselves and take time out, sleep being so important that he talks about, you know, really analysing ourselves and thinking about ourselves and giving ourselves time.
Well, I've got to ask you what you do to ease the stress and take the heat off.
Yeah, so I love my dogs. I've got my sheepdog, but also dogs in the house. And my wife and I will go for walks with them every day. And when I walk into the house, they're wagging their tails and they're all pleased to see me. And just walking out in the countryside with my dogs, I don't have to go off the farm. I'm lucky to live in the countryside. You know, listening to the birds, the wind blowing through the trees, the leaves under your feet, you know, may sound a bit corny, but that relaxes me.
And how important do you think it is to have a kind of release valve?
I think it's absolutely essential. I think we have to, whatever your walk of life, really, we need to have hobbies. We need to have people from outside work to socialise with, and friends and people to talk to. And I think we sometimes ignore that, and particularly in farming, when you're working so hard in all conditions, long hours, you know, we find it difficult to remember that you've got to give yourself some time and find that release valve.
Thank you, Adam. I'm Dominic Arkwright. That's all for now.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Keeping on Track. I hope you found things in it that were helpful for you or someone you know. If you've been affected by anything you've heard today, or in any other programme, you can find more information about organisations which can provide help and support by going to teamdoctor.org/farmers. Until the next time, keep on track.